to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. You say the word or the words Notre Dame and you think of a prestigious, top-ranked university. It is famous not only academically and in terms of research. It is famous in terms of its cultural impact and, of course, its sports program. There's no two ways about it. It's also famous because it's a Roman Catholic university, perhaps the preeminent Roman Catholic university in the United States, if not the world. They recently took a decision there, an odd decision, given the fact that they had an exemption from the HHS mandate under so-called Obamacare on the issue of whether or not they had to cover through their health insurance contraceptives. They had a full-blown exemption, and yet they recently took a decision to provide certain contraceptives to their employees and to their students. Joining us to talk about this move and what it means, Alexandra DeSanctis. She's an alum of Notre Dame. She's William F. Buckley Jr. Fellow at the National Review Institute and author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled Notre Dame Becomes a Bit Less Catholic. Alexandra, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hi, great to be with you.
You were a graduate of Notre Dame. Why did you attend there in the first place, and what does this decision mean to you as a graduate?
You know, growing up as a Catholic, I obviously always really looked up to Notre Dame. I think Catholics across the country probably share that feeling. And when I visited campus as a high schooler, I just remember looking everywhere and thinking how clearly Catholic this place was. You know, there's the grotto on campus. Every dorm has a chapel with a tabernacle in it all hours of the day. So much the faculty really cares about the Catholic faith. And this was all so clear to me. And, you know, that's something I really wanted in my education, along with the kind of academic reputation that Notre Dame has. And so that mattered a lot. That was a huge part of why I wanted to go there and a huge part of why I ended up loving it. You know, I had a great experience there, and it was precisely when Notre Dame was most Catholic that I most valued my time there. And that's why, you know, as I wrote in my column today, this decision was especially disheartening to me as someone who believes Notre Dame represents something unique to American society. And that's not because it's, you know, one of a few top educational institutions, but because it combines that kind of academic reputation and success with this unique Catholic identity that no other top-ranked university really has.
So what did Notre Dame decide to do about contraception coverage for its students and employees?
It's the decision that has gone back and forth quite a few times, but the simplest way of putting it now is that despite receiving a religious exemption to the Health and Human Services contraceptive mandate from the Trump administration, which offered, you know, this all religious institutions the chance to, you know, say that their religious beliefs precluded them from providing contraceptives, Notre Dame instead decided that it will, through its own healthcare plan, directly provide what they're calling simple contraceptives to employees and to students on the healthcare plan. And this is distinct from what was happening under the Obama administration, because Notre Dame had been complying in the meantime while they were suing the federal government over this mandate. Instead of taking this exemption, they decided to go ahead and offer the very coverage that they sued the government to be free from.
So which is the real Notre Dame, the one that was suing or the one that's made this decision?
I think that's, you know, that's the money question here. It's not really clear, because in the lawsuit, Notre Dame called contraception a grave moral evil, said that because the church is a core tenet of the Catholic faith, that contraception, you know, is not permitted and is a moral evil. And as a result, Notre Dame's religious freedom entitled it to an exemption from this contraceptive mandate under the Obama administration. That was the grounds on which Notre Dame sued and ended up winning that lawsuit. And so now to go back on that and to provide these contraceptives is very puzzling, because it seems to suggest that, you know, maybe being forced or compelled to provide them, or at least providing them, isn't a violation of religious freedom at all. And I think the administration of Notre Dame is trying to draw this sort of very fine line and say that, well, we just needed to be free from government coercion. That was the problem. But in the lawsuit, the university said that the issue was having to provide these contraceptives. And so now to be providing them seems to undermine the grounds of the lawsuit.
Was there any silver lining to the dark cloud of this decision?
I mean, it's hard to say. You know, Father Jenkins did decide, and the board decided that they certainly will not be covering abortifacient drugs, contraceptives, emergency contraceptives that can cause an abortion, and they also won't be covering sterilization procedures under university healthcare. So these are definitely things that are worth praising. Notre Dame very easily could have justified those using similar rationale to the rationale they used to cover contraceptives. So I certainly am glad about that, and it's worth praising Father Jenkins for it, I think.
I'm wondering, you make the point in your Wall Street Journal piece that Notre Dame does not pry into the private moral lives of its student or its employees, that whether they were contracepting or not was not the issue, but the issue here is the university's direct involvement in that since they are providing for it. Expand on that a little bit more.
Yeah, that's correct. And I think this is a distinction that's been lost a little bit. And, you know, the rationale that was given by the university for this decision was, you know, part of the Catholic tradition is respecting the freedom of conscience that every individual person has to decide what's right for their own life. And of course, that's true to an extent. But the question here isn't, as you said, whether people on Notre Dame's campus or on Notre Dame's healthcare plan are permitted to use contraception, but rather whether the university will provide it. So even if this decision hadn't been made, anybody there could still very easily make a conscientious choice to use contraception. They would just need to, you know, provide the money to do that themselves. And of course, people have argued that that could be a financial burden or whatever. And sure, of course, it could be in some cases, but that is not really a matter of conscience. And it's not a matter of whether or not Notre Dame is violating the Catholic faith by providing or being involved in providing this service.
So are we watching Notre Dame simply in a small way, but significant way, cave to the pressure it's been under to do this for so long by groups that would come and distribute contraceptives on campus and things like that?
I do think so. And my main reason for thinking that is because there wasn't anything to lose in this situation other than the respect of sort of public secular figures and institutions, because Notre Dame had this exemption from the Trump administration. Not only did they win their lawsuit initially, but they also have this blanket religious freedom exemption under which they're now permitted to not provide these contraceptives. And they even said last year at one point that they would take that exemption and wouldn't be providing any of these services. And so to go back on that in the wake of, you know, small protests on campus and just sort of a general sense from maybe the outside kind of secular world that Notre Dame's so behind the times, I think shows that, you know, what really motivated this decision, perhaps in part a concern for members of the community who do want to use contraception, but I think largely it is a matter of public image and not wanting to look a certain way in the eyes of people that Notre Dame's administration care about.
How do Christian universities like this, how do they become increasingly secularized?
You know, I'm not totally sure. I think there are a lot of factors in play, at least speaking to Notre Dame in particular. I think it's difficult to balance trying to be an elite university with great academic renown, obviously an elite football team a lot of the time, and factors like this and being looked at by the nation as a leading institution of higher learning, but also to have the integrity that comes with having a Catholic mission. And I think to the extent that you sometimes have to compromise the latter to make headway on the former or to be ranked highly with your peer institutions, sometimes the temptation is there to let small things slide on the other end or to find these types of things that you can bill as a compromise, or you can appeal to something like conscience and say, look, we're not really violating the Catholic faith, we're just letting people exercise freedom. I think there's something to the idea of welcoming everybody, of course, onto Notre Dame's campus and respecting people of all faiths and respecting conscience. But the question is, where is the line in terms of defending Catholic teaching? And I'm afraid in this instance, it's been crossed.
Could we expect any response or comment from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops on this?
I'd be a little bit surprised, honestly. You know, Notre Dame, the bishop of Fort Wayne South Bend Diocese, where Notre Dame is located, came out and said that he is not on board with this decision that Notre Dame made. But I don't, in my experience, the U.S. Conference hasn't weighed in on anything at Notre Dame in the past, any controversy like this.
Finally, then, does this decision by Notre Dame provide cover for other Catholic institutions, especially Catholic universities, to follow suit?
I'm afraid that it does, because it kind of tells the world that you can be a Catholic institution, and not only that, but proudly call yourself Catholic and advertise yourself to incoming students as Catholic and, you know, speak on moral issues with the authority of a Catholic institution, and with the other hand, be providing for something that the Catholic Church deems a grave moral evil and that you yourself have called grave moral evil. And I think more than that, it might even call into question when some religious institutions say sincerely, we really do believe this is a moral evil and we don't want to be involved in it. Notre Dame sort of provides a counterexample of someone who, a Catholic institution that thinks it's perfectly fine. So I'm afraid there's kind of a double-edged sword here that's not really going to end up well for anybody.
Alexandra DeSanctis is William F. Buckley Jr. Fellow at the National Review Institute. She's author of a recent column for the Wall Street Journal titled Notre Dame Becomes a Bit Less Catholic. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Alexandra, thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
When we come back, it's hour two of Issues Etc. It's Friday, so two of our regular Friday features will fill the second hour. This week in Pop American Christianity, we'll talk about the heavy burden of finding and fulfilling your dream destiny. Pastor Chris Roseborough, Fighting for the Faith, will be our guest. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour. Hour two of Issues Etc. is next.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We would like to overlook the difficulty of daily repentance and death to our sins in the interest of progressing to a more advanced spirituality.
Rebecca Curtis from her new audiobook, Ladylike, Living Biblically.
Somehow, spiritual advancement always amounts to our getting to spend more time on the things we like and calling it stewardship or service.
You can purchase and download an audio version of Ladylike, Living Biblically at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. Ladylike, Living Biblically by Rebecca Curtis and Rose Adel.